Diabetes is a major cause of heart disease and stroke and the leading cause of kidney failure, non-traumatic lower limb amputations, and new cases of blindness among adults in the United States. It is also the seventh leading cause of death. And in 2010, among U.S. residents 65 years and older, 27% had diabetes. It's been characterized by some as growing in epidemic proportions along with obesity in this country, and a true public health crisis that requires aggressive action to reduce its incidence as well as to treat its consequences. Well, joining me this morning to shed some light on some of the newest efforts at the prevention and treatment of diabetes are Dr. Paula Treif, clinical psychologist and professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Cynthia Morrow, commissioner of health for Onondaga County. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this morning. So let's start out with, you know, why, Dr. Morrow, why do you think this is happening in this country now in terms of this, that we've had this increase in the incidence of diabetes?
Well, I think that we have to look at lifestyles as well as the built environment. Our whole culture has changed. We're far more physically inactive than we've ever been. We spend a lot of time sitting at computers, watching TV, and in addition to not being physically active, there's a difference between sitting on your bottom and not doing going out and exercising. But we also have much larger portion sizes. There's so many things that are related to why we're increasing both in obesity and diabetes, and they really do go hand in hand.
Yeah, we've been seeing, I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk of late of how we've been infused with this kind of high fructose corn syrup in every single thing we do and buy, and clearly people are just gaining more and more and more weight than we've ever seen. Do you see that, Dr.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That not only are people gaining more weight, but there's some research that shows that our standards for what we think are acceptable to us have shifted, so that when people by medical definitions would be considered obese or overweight, by the common person's view of that person, they often don't think of themselves in that way, because our comparison group has also shifted. We're just more comfortable with being overweight.
Yeah, and that's troubling. Because why? I mean, what are the consequences? Why is it such a concern, Dr. Morrow?
Diabetes is a devastating disease. It's long-term. And, of course, I think we need to be very careful that we're really talking about type 2 diabetes,
right? Yes.
And where the focus is really a close association with obesity.
And excuse me for interrupting you, but that's generally adult onset.
Generally, right. Yes.
Although there are now children with type 2 diabetes, there's actually a large study that's been going on looking at kids who have type 2, which is very, very unusual. And so those children are 11, 12, 13, 250, 300, sometimes 350 pounds, very, very large children. And so they are not only going to be dealing with diabetes, but they'll be dealing with the complications of diabetes much at a much younger age, and will have significant effects.
So the big distinction, though, as I recall, type 1 is totally insulin dependent, and the type 2, I guess, you can function with some insulin or not at all, even by just changing diet.
Type 2, for a great extent, is preventable. And that's, we have large national studies that show that, and that's really what we want to focus on, is the impact that lifestyle has on people's long-term health outcomes. When someone has type 2 diabetes at a young age, and that is becoming younger and younger, they face a lifetime. If they don't change their lifestyle, they can face a lifetime of much increased risk of cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, strokes, as you mentioned, lower extremity amputations, kidney damage, ultimately kidney failure, and blindness. These are health impacts that have a devastating long-term consequence on the individual.
And also on our whole healthcare system, because clearly if there are more and more people suffering from these issues, it could bankrupt our healthcare system going forward. I mean, we have that many more people to take care of. Mm-hmm. And so it has ramifications both for the individual and on a public health standpoint. Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like there's a great need to do something about it. And clearly some large figures like Michelle Obama has come out in the last year or so about this Move Now, or I forget what she called it, Get Moving, but to try to get adolescents and young people to recognize the importance in terms of changing their lifestyle habits to perhaps forestall or avoid the onset of type 2 diabetes.
There are certainly a lot of efforts. Many different places, schools, communities, the efforts to take soft drinks out of the vending machines in schools. There's a lot of programs that are going on, most of which are effective in the short term in terms of helping people either lose weight or prevent weight gain. It's the longer term that's more of the challenge. There are a lot of interventions that demonstrate that you can help people successfully lose weight if they're motivated to do so, obviously. But it's the keeping it off that's the biggest problem from a behavioral perspective.
What troubles me is something you said earlier, which is it sounds like there's almost a cultural acceptance, almost a mindset in the way we begin to view being overweight, which in a way flies in the face of when you see all these people becoming anorexic and the very skinny models. So we seem like we have these polar opposites taking place at the same time.
Yeah. I think that we do, and I think that what we really try to focus on from a public health perspective is looking at the built environment, looking at sort of our defaults. What do we do in our societies, in our cultures that create healthy options versus unhealthy options? Complete streets is an example of where we're trying to look at how the structural environment, whether they're sidewalks or not, whether they're safe places for people to go. We know that if people don't feel like they can safely walk because there's no sidewalk, they will not walk. If there's no safe place to ride your bike, you will not ride your bike. We need to look from a societal perspective of how we've created our environment to have healthy defaults rather than unhealthy defaults. And that's really part of the equation.
Yeah, and I think that extends over into the diet, into the eating world, I should say. I don't mean diet as in weight loss, but into the eating world as well, where you have, as you said, very large portions, food filled with high fructose corn syrup, the kinds of choices that are much more appealing, high fat, high sweet kinds of foods. We've accustomed ourselves to drinking, to eating those kinds of foods.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because I want to come back and talk much more about that. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Dr. Paula Treep and Dr. Cynthia Morrow. And we're talking about diabetes and why it's such a problem in this country and potentially methods for reducing it. And before the break, Dr. Treep, you were talking about the fact that our taste or our interest in food, in a sense, has been altered or regulated in a different way.
Yeah, it was just an interesting presentation that I had seen of a woman talking about the move towards artificial sweeteners and how that was essentially manipulated by corporations who were trying to sell artificial sweeteners. But one of the results of that is that you think that would lead to weight loss or help us not gain weight. But in fact, of course, the obesity epidemic has gone right up with the use of artificial sweeteners. And so her point was that it made us want sweet things. And those sweeteners are much, much sweeter than sugar is, which really doesn't even have that many calories. So now we look for sweets more than maybe we did 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, we definitely have been manipulated. But what sounds like recently you've been involved in potentially manipulating, or rather than that,
hopefully in a very positive
way. Right, educating and providing a very, very positive experience for some of the Onondaga County employees in our community. So you did a study. You want to tell us about that? When did that study take place and what was it, Dr. Treef?
When did it take place?
We started working together back in 2007 and 8. We actually implemented the study in 2008. But really, this was a partnership, and we were very excited to have a partnership between the county and upstate to look at ways that we could potentially prevent diabetes or control diabetes working within the work site. And so we partnered, and the study went on for a couple of years. And really it was about trying to engage county employees who were at risk for diabetes or who had diabetes, and bring some educational sessions and use the DPP, Paula, you, mm-hmm. I'm sure you can talk about that, mm-hmm. at the work site.
Mm-hmm. Which was a model, this DPP, which right. is the Diabetes Prevention Program. Tell us about
so
that.
So the Diabetes Prevention Program is a large study that was done in many, many sites across the country where they work with people who are at risk for diabetes because of obesity and other medical issues, to lose weight. And they compared a group that did a lifestyle intervention to a group that took a diabetes medication to a control group. And what they found was that the lifestyle intervention group had a 58% decreased incidence of diabetes in 3 years than the control group. And the drug, the medication, was like a 37%, I believe. So the medication worked also, but the lifestyle intervention was much more effective. So it actually was the first study to demonstrate that if you help people lose weight, they are likely to decrease their risk of developing type 2 diabetes, at least within the relatively short term.
So when you say lifestyle intervention, tell us more about what you did in your study, but what does that mean? What did that translate into?
So in the DPP and in our study, too, they had 16 sessions. We had 12 sessions, but basically group sessions. In our study, it was group sessions, working with people to help them do things that I think everybody knows about. Keep track of what they were eating, eat healthy, eat lower carb foods, eat lower fat foods, become more active, become less sedentary. We also added working on stress-related issues because we felt that that was important, and depression, and help support them through the process so that they were keeping track and setting goals and making changes.
So there were about how many people involved in the study?
About 45 people were involved in the study. These were individuals who self-selected. They chose to participate in the study. And I think that the important thing for us was we have seen this occur outside of the workplace, but the majority of adults spend most of their time at the workplace. So we were interested in looking at what happens if you bring the intervention to the workplace. It decreases sick time. They don't have to go to the employees don't have to leave the office to go get the intervention. They can stay right there. And we were very hopeful that it would increase participation. The people who did participate were extremely enthusiastic about participating, and they really were motivated.
Mm-hmm. And I would add that when we started, because we weren't sure how to integrate it into the workplace, we had a couple of little focus groups of people who were working there saying, what would need to happen to make this work for you? And the one thing that jumped out loud and clear was that they felt that they were hesitant to use their vacation time. If they had to use time that was their own personal time, that was just about the same as leaving early and going to a group someplace else, and they didn't think they would do it. And so that was something that we went to Dr. Mara. My colleague is Dr. Ruth Weinstock. She's a big part of all of this partnering. And we went to Dr. Mara and said, is this possible? Is it possible to give them some time? And she was able to
administrative leave time
so that they didn't have to. And so she was able to give them each, it's an hour group, so they each had a half an hour of administrative leave time and then a half an hour of their own time, which really showed that they're both making the commitment, that the employer was making the commitment as well as the individual. And I think that was just tremendous. People said that to us repeatedly, that the fact that their employer was willing to do that meant that not only gave them extra time, but also meant that the employer was behind this. And that was they gave us a space, and we had time to do the assessments for the study as well. We gave them little snacks, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And those little things really made them feel very valued. I think it had a really positive effect.
I think that we were able to do that because we had complete support, of course, of Upstate, but also the county executive's office and the legislature. Everybody recognized the importance of trying to keep our workforce healthy. And one of the interesting things about the study was that people who participated, who were successful at losing weight, were happier at work.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that when our workforce feels cared for and
valued,
that has a positive impact. So it was really integrating all of those concepts with a lot of support from at a lot of different levels.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like the opposite is also true when people are feeling stressed, not appreciated. They might tend to eat more,
mm-hmm,
and create the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like, employers really have a prime opportunity to influence and to educate and to assist with the health issues when it comes to diabetes, if they're so inclined. But it has a benefit for them as well, because less absenteeism, happier workforce, all the things that you mentioned. So what was the upshot? I mean, people basically, what were the results? What did you find?
The results were positive. The people did lose, I mean, overall, the people lost weight. We kind of compared a group that started at one point to a group that was waiting, so that everybody got a chance to participate, but they just had to kind of stagger it. And the people lost weight, and their BMI went down, and their quality of life went up, and their activity level went up, and the results were quite positive. The only negative was, and it's not surprising, was that once the intervention stopped, there was this gradual regain. We did find that waist circumference continued to stay pretty much the same, but that there was this gradual regain. And that's really the case in most weight loss intervention studies. You can, as I said earlier, you can help people make the changes to lose weight, but the lasting change to keep it off is much more of a challenge. And this was a relatively brief intervention.
Yeah, you said how many weeks? 12 weeks.
12 weeks.
12 sessions.
And then they had monthly sessions.
Monthly
for
sessions
up to
afterwards,
a year.
Right? Up to a year.
Okay. Well, the other point I think that you made, Dr. Morrow, which I think was spot on, was this notion of changing the environment as well. I mean, in this case, you intervened with a a small group session, which changed their environment in terms of a supportive place to discuss all these things. But how might employers actually change an environment where they could be encouraging more healthy lifestyles or stress reduction? I mean, I read somewhere that people suggest things like start a walking club or make sure that food that's offered is healthier. Have you had any thoughts about that for the county as a whole?
Well, certainly it's very important, as we talked about earlier, defaults in terms of sidewalks, but also defaults in terms of food options. It's really important to make the healthful food options price consistent with the unhealthful food options, as well as readily available. And that's something that we're seeing more and more across the country with vending machines, fast food restaurants. People really are starting to get it, that we need to make healthful options much more available in all ways. There's some model employers in other places where they have very intentionally created the cafeteria or built the cafeteria far away from the conference room so that people have to walk. They've created lovely parking lots, again, distant from the area. Obviously, as a county in a city, that's very, very difficult, and I'm not suggesting that occur, but for some of the outside employers, that may be an option. But developing the walking clubs, and I think that what we saw with the study is people really like to be together, as you mentioned. So walking clubs and having lunch, healthful lunch gatherings. We have continued to have salad days once a month where people get together and bring healthful food. And talking about it, just that group, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. There was one study where what they did was they just put up signs to encourage people to walk the stairs, and they found that people actually did, as opposed to the sign to the elevator, you know, that there's a sign to the stairs. It says, take the stairs for the one floor, two floors that you're walking.
Well, those are all wonderful ideas. I know I've seen also hold weight loss contests, that kind of thing, but clearly employers have to try to kind of buy into this, but I think everyone would benefit from it. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm Dr. Paula Tree, clinical psychologist and professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Cynthia Morrow, commissioner of health for Onondaga County. Thanks so much for coming in this morning and sharing all your insights about this serious public health problem and this wonderful study that you were able to do.
Thank you.
We have to take a short break. We'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSB.